Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, December 2nd, 2022, front page. Police report homicides in city up to 10. Investigation into 17-year-old's shooting death is ongoing. No arrests have been made. For the third straight year, there will be 10 or more homicides inside the city of Midland. The Midland Police Department reported Thursday that homicide number 10 took place Wednesday in West Midland. MPD stated a 17-year-old male sustained multiple gunshot wounds and was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was later pronounced deceased. The Reporter-Telegram previously reported that 2021 finished with 11 homicides, one less than 2020, when there were 12 inside the city of Midland. 2020 represented the most homicides in one year, going back at least a decade. In fact, that total was as many as 2017 to 2019 combined, 12. MPD also reported the most homicides in one year from 2011 to 2019 was 7 in both 2014 and 2015. Midland Police Chief Seth Herman previously said criminal homicides generally fall into two categories, relationships or drug-gun deals, and that not all homicides are of the criminal variety, including self-defense and officer-involved situations. He added that while law enforcement attacks the gun and drug trades, he hopes Midlanders can do their part by locking up their firearms as people are leaving their guns in cars and these guns are being stolen, especially by noticeably younger criminals. That adds to the number of weapons on the streets, and therefore the chances of violence increase. What happened? Wednesday. MPD reported around 5 p.m. Wednesday, Police Department personnel and Midland Fire Department EMS responded to the 1900 block of North Midland Drive, north of Andrews Highway, in reference to a gunshot victim. Crimes Against Persons Unit and MPD Crime Scene Unit also were notified and responded to the scene. MPD reported Thursday that no arrests have been made at this time and the investigation is ongoing. Progress being made on Midland's largest series of road projects. 20 of 26 road bond projects are complete by Stuart Doreen. The construction on Midland's older roads continues. Meanwhile, at the same time, the city continues to plan, engineer, and construct new roads in growing parts of the city. This week, Jose Ortiz, the Director of Engineering Services for the City of Midland, provided an update on what's taking place and what's next for the city's road system. The update includes a report on the $100 million road bond, which is about to complete year five. Ortiz also addressed the Wadley Avenue extension, potential north-south options heading into Northeast Midland, and the completion of Industrial Avenue, a partnership with Midland County that fixed a headache for those in the industrial park area of Southwest Midland. Road bond update. Ortiz said 20 of the 26 projects are complete. He also said he understands that residents, especially those traveling inside Central Midland, have construction fatigue. He said the City of Midland doesn't have control over day-to-day operations of the sites. He also said weather and the lack of available workforce can create problems with getting jobs done in a more timely fashion. However, road bond was the first upgrade to Midland's road system in decades, if not longer, and certainly the largest. He said the city is still under budget for the entire project, and work has started on 5 of the remaining 6 projects. His updates include potential end dates for the 5 projects under construction. They included New York Avenue in early 2023, maybe as early as January. A Street north of Scarborough in late spring of 2023. Rain events carry water down the middle of the road on A Street, and that has caused some delays. He also said concrete will be used from Ventura to the draw to prevent the type of deterioration that can take place with asphalt roads. Solomon Lane, in summer of 2023, utilities are complete and paving work has started. Garfield Avenue to the north of Midland Memorial Hospital. Ortiz expects an 18-month process from bid to paving, including the roundabout at Cuthbert and A. The project has been broken up to allow as much access as possible to Midland Memorial. Ortiz also said the length of the project is due to improvements with stormwater and utilities. The project will also include some concrete paving and some mill and inlay closer to Wadley Avenue. Illinois Avenue, A Street to the hospital, in and around 6 months. Initial utility work closer to Midland High took place during the summer, and some mill and inlay took place during an intercession when MISD was not in session. Ortiz said the project is complete through H Street, and the rest of the project is being done differently as utilities and construction are being coupled together to save time. Ortiz was open about one of the biggest complaints heard about the road bond process, the amount of inaction on projects. He said to get better pricing, utilities and construction were bid out separately. He also said the city was impacted because of the sheer amount of traffic through the heart of the city and the sheer amount of projects around the city, county, and region. When the bond was voted on, it was difficult for anyone in city government, or Midland in general, to envision the amount of projects that would happen in the county, where tens of millions have been invested, or around the region, as the state, the Texas Department of Transportation, has opened its purse strings to fund West Texas projects in unprecedented fashion over the last 5 years. Ortiz noted there are a half a dozen contractors that can handle utility work, but really only two companies for paving projects, Reese Albert and Jones Brothers. Newer companies, he said, aren't able to handle the work that comes with major city roads. Group buys part of Pickens Ranch. Midland's Kent leads purchase of 36,000-plus acre western side of Mesa Vista Ranch by Steve Brown, Dallas Morning News. Late Dallas billionaire T. Boone Pickens' sprawling West Texas ranch has sold. The 64,672-acre Mesa Vista Ranch in the Texas Panhandle has been for sale since 2017, most recently with a price tag of $170 million. A group of buyers headed by West Texas oil and gas investor Bill Kent completed the purchase of the 36,000-plus acre western side of the ranch this week, which includes the 25,000-square-foot lodge where Pickens entertained guests. Cattle rancher Travis Chester bought the 27,700-acre eastern section of Mesa Vista Ranch in September. Financial terms of the sales were not disclosed, but proceeds of the two transactions were within about 10% of the $170 million asking price, according to Jay Rosser, vice president of public affairs at BP Capital and a longtime associate of Pickens. Pickens died in 2019 at age 91. He spent decades assembling land and building the huge home at Mesa Vista Ranch in Roberts County, northeast of Amarillo. Pickens began acquiring the property in 1971 with a 2,926-acre purchase along the south side of the Canadian River. The 101-square-mile Mesa Vista Ranch includes broad mesas, lakes and rivers, and was originally priced at $250 million. The centerpiece ranch lodge has a large dining room with a massive fireplace, a library with a spiral staircase, a conference room, a 30-seat theater, a wine cellar, an office, and a commercial kitchen. The property includes a tennis court, a shooting range, a small golf course, and a two-story pub. There's a lakeside chapel and a private lake house with 11,500 square feet of living area and 3,800 square feet of porches and patios. Mesa Vista Ranch has its own lighted runway that can handle jet service. Real estate brokers Sam Middleton of Chase S. Middleton & Son and Monty Lyons of Hall & Hall handled the sale. Buyer Bill Kent is CEO of Midland-based Kent Companies, which operates a growing chain of service station and convenience stores in Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Tennessee, South Carolina, and North Carolina. The company also provides fuel to retail customers in Louisiana, Texas, and Alabama. And Kent Companies is expanding with the purchase of the Houston Signage Company, a chain of check cashing outlets, tire stores, car washes, and urgent medical care facilities. The Mesa Vista trade is the latest of several recent big Texas ranch sales. The 266,254-acre 4 Sixes Ranch in West Texas, King County, sold this year to Hollywood screenwriter and producer Taylor Sheridan. And Dallas-based broker Icon Global is marketing the 80,000-acre Turkey Track Ranch in the Texas Panhandle. The almost 80,000-acre property is along the Canadian River near the town of Borger. From the inside pages of the MRT, Friday, December 2nd. Commentary. Manor Park helps dispel myths about aging. By Carmen Hendricks Bryant, Shelley Harper, Aaron Black, and Steve Pitts. The Manor Park Board. What are your thoughts on aging? Do you wonder if you or your loved one will be adequately cared for as health needs arise? Can older adults stay healthy and active? Or do you relate aging to disease and decline? For more than 50 years, Manor Park has provided a beautiful, nonprofit retirement community for folks that want to live life to the fullest with independence, security, and choice. We promote and encourage healthy aging, where all residents are accepted and welcomed. Every day, our core values of peace of mind, well-being, and hospitality drive decisions for our current and future residents. Myths about aging often lead people to not get the help they need, whether they are the caregiver or the one needing care. Support from the community enables Manor Park to help dispel the myths with providing peace of mind through high-quality assisted living, memory care, and health care services, places that are sometimes the safest place to be for those we love. More myths are that older people lose curiosity and creativity and become disinterested and disengaged in life. Manor Park's Wellness Center, dog parks, putting greens, beauty salons, and full activity calendars provide well-being for our independent living residents and all other levels of care. From the welcoming dining venues and activity centers where friends can gather and socialize, hospitality is felt everywhere. To stay competitive in a tight market, we must also plan for the next generation of residents who will require modern amenities, technology, activities, and more. A completely new and sustainable landscape plan for campus is in the works. Manor Park's nonprofit status means we are uniquely qualified to provide the best care at a reasonable cost, and we rely on support from caring friends like you to update and maintain our campus, best serve our current residents and those to come. Please consider supporting Manor Park with your holiday contribution. Your donations really do make a difference in the lives of our residents. Editor's note: this is the first guest column from a local nonprofit highlighting its service during the giving season. How to make donations. Online, manorparkinc.org. Mail, Manor Park, 2208 North Loop 250 West, Midland, Texas, 79707. Permian Basin Area Foundation awards $1.7 million in grants. From staff reports. Permian Basin Area Foundation has awarded $1.71 million to nonprofit organizations serving West Texans during its fall grant cycle. Grants Administrator Raymond Williams stated, "It is a pleasure to work with these nonprofit organizations and partner with them. Our nonprofits serve so many in our communities, and it's a privilege to award these grants." The foundation announces competitive grant awards semi-annually following review of applications submitted in the spring and fall. Spring grant cycle pre-applications are due on April 1st. Visit pbaf.org to apply. Here's a sidebar that accompanies the previous story. At a glance, Permian Basin Area Foundation made grants to Addie's Hope Adoption Agency, Agape Counseling, Alpine Christian School, Alpine Humane Society, Alpine Public Library, Boys and Girls Club, Permian Basin, Buckner Children and Family Services, Chinati Foundation, Food Pantry of Jeff Davis County, Friendship House, High Sky Children's Ranch, Hillcrest School, Manor Park, Marfa Public Radio, Midland Children's Rehab Center, Midland Education Foundation, Mission Agape, Odessa Chamber of Commerce, Ozona Community Center, Permian Basin Rehab Center, Pink the Basin, Safe Place of the Permian Basin, Salvation Army of Big Spring, Ward County Greater Works, West Texas Food Bank. Permian Basin Giving Tree to benefit foster kids in region, from staff reports. Representatives, the organizations that benefit from the Permian Basin Giving Tree, One Accord for Kids, the Attic Foster Network, and the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, were on hand Wednesday to unveil the mobile Permian Basin Giving Tree. The tree will provide an opportunity to allow small, local businesses to spread cheer and goodwill to the growing number of foster children in the Permian Basin, according to a news release. Heritage USA Federal Credit Union is partnering with One Accord for Kids and The Attic to contribute to efforts to make Christmas memorable for foster kids and to provide the organizations with new and innovative ways to build their impact by way of a new tradition, the news release stated. If a person or business wants information on the Mobile Permian Basin Giving Tree, call 432-279-0278. Downtown Wine Food Bar to Close Doors by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Low Street Books announced via Instagram Wednesday night that the beloved wine and food bar would permanently close its 201 West Wall Street doors on Monday. However, private parties will continue to be available through December. Owned by Seth and Hannah Strian and Brian and Lauren Johnson, Low Street Books opened on May 26, 2021, and just recently added a commercial kitchen, forging delicious bites such as fried Brussels, the Wall Tower Burger, and more to the wine and cocktail-oriented menu. The family also runs Micro Market, a collection of local businesses found downtown across from Centennial Park. Other businesses join the crew during events. When asked why the sudden change in business, Lauren told the Reporter Telegram, "We were approached about selling Low Street Books, and with where we are at in life, and where we are at with Micro Market expanding quickly, it honestly made the most sense. It is bittersweet for us, but also a very exciting time to be able to focus on the next project. We have had the honor of serving and fostering a great community of guests, coworkers, and neighbors. It has always been the goal of Micro Market to engage the community with new and existing businesses, restaurants, and gathering places, as well as inspiring entrepreneurs to take the leap and bring their business to market. Though changes are inevitable, they do not have to be unpleasant. Micro Market will continue to help foster those relationships, and we are excited about what is to come. Thank you for your continued support as we continue to grow, create, and evolve. Small Bites. Tall City Bagel to debut beer-boiled bagels Saturday by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Even though his uncle owns a bagel shop in Long Island and his cousin in New Jersey, Mike Schlettman, didn't practice culinary until coming to West Texas, instead, he worked in IT and security. But after his company pink-slipped the entire department, things started to change. With the successful minor league hockey podcast in play, Schlettman uprooted his California tech life and started traveling via Econoline E350, interviewing teams and coaches. 18 months of van life passed, but as Schlettman hit the Guadalupe Mountains, concerning noises came from the four-wheeled vehicle. Nevertheless, the Brooklyn native persisted. 3.5 hours later, on Loop 250, the trusty old mobile home gave up, stranding Schlettman in a city he didn't even know existed. Think it ends there? Wrong. 2 weeks later, the pandemic hit. So when the first stimulus check arrived, Schlettman said goodbye to everything he knew, got an apartment, started selling keto-friendly food at the farmers markets around town, and the rest is history. Known as Keto Mike, the home baker only recently started Tall City Bagel in late October after keto produce became too expensive to maintain a stable and reasonably priced business. Naturally, keto eater himself went to the one other thing he knew best, New York-style bagels. Different than the bagel most Texans imagine, Schlettman lets his handmade, hand-rolled dough rise for 90 minutes. Then, after being shaped around his wrist, they're popped into a precise measurement of water in order to reach the perfect layered center and crispy outside. Of course, Schlettman's creations contain secret family recipes, taking his bites above and beyond, yet he continues to experiment and create new flavors. The most recent? A partnership with Eccentric Brewing Company. On Saturday at the 1402 Cotton Flat Road hotspot, Schlettman will debut two beer-boiled bagels. By adding beer to his boiling water, the bagels will receive a glaze-like finish and contain a boozy taste. The first, a pretzel bagel covered in real pretzel salt, will contain Eccentric signature stout FMJ, a bold, roasty malt with coffee and chocolate flavors. Specialty made dipping sauces for the beer pretzel bagel include an Italian honey mustard and a spicy mustard cheese. The second bagel incorporates Eccentric's Sugar Plum, a Christmas release. To bring out the fruity flavors in the beer, Schlettman created a special blueberry smear to gracefully coat each bite, creating a flavorful explosion for each patron. Yet the fun doesn't stop with just the bagels. DJ Mikey Ja will be bringing the reggae tunes to Eccentric on Saturday night as well. In the end, Schlettman says he enjoys bringing his New York home to Midland, a town he didn't expect to grow on him, but has learned to love. I'm learning there's a lot of former New Yorkers here, and they're really enjoying that there's a real New York bagel here. Beyond the beer-boiled bagels, Tall City Bagel contains 12 signature flavors and 2 to 3 weekly surprise flavors. Schlettman also holds a pop-up from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Wednesdays at the Fuel Bar, 610 North Big Spring Street, Suite A, where 9 times out of 10, he sells out fast. My personal favorite stands with the cinnamon raisin. Not always a flavor I love, however. Schlettman recently beautifully perfects the sweet-to-savory mix along with a chewy and delectable inside. My second place goes to his blueberry, both huge and fruity, and third to his everything, a true New York treat. Tall City Bagel also does orders day of, so customers can count on fresh, warm bagels delivered to their door. Have dietary restrictions? No problem. Schlattman does vegan, gluten-free, keto, and more with every bagel and schmear. To place an order, visit tallcitybagel.com or message via Facebook at facebook.com/tallcitybagel and online at Instagram, Instagram @tallcity.bagel. To try a bite in person, visit Eccentric Brewing Company on Saturday. Obituaries published in the Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, December 2nd, 2022. Dorothy Jean Westlake Newton. Dorothy Jean Westlake Newton passed away Friday, November 25th, 2022, at the age of 91. Dorothy was born in Hillsboro, Texas, on Tuesday, March 9th, 1931, to Ilu Vistal Newton and Maddie Viola Abel Newton. On January 6, 1951, she married Dick Westlake at Edgeford Church of Christ in Dallas. In April of 2018, she lost her beloved husband of 67 years. Dorothy was the youngest of five siblings, all of whom are now deceased. She had three children, Richard Lee and wife Julie, Ronald David and wife Judy, and Brenda Donise Walker and husband Wes. She was also blessed with 10 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. A private graveside service will be held in Salado on December 3rd. Memorial donations are welcome at the American Heart Association, donatenow.heart.org, or the charity of your choice. Joanne Halpert. Joanne Halpert passed away on November 19, 2022, at the age of 95. She was born to Frank and Clara Johnson of Grotos, Virginia, on May 25, 1927. She met her future husband, Robert Halpert, while both were in Venezuela. They had 59 wonderful years together. She is survived by sons Robert and James and daughter Laura, along with 6 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please donate to Hospice of Midland on her behalf. Thomasine Gocher. Thomasine Armstrong Gocher, 92, of Midland, passed away November 29, 2022. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, December 3, 2022, at 10 a.m., at Mid-Cities Community Church, Neely Campus in Midland. Burial will be held at Oakland Cemetery in Oakland, Texas, following the service. Thomasine was born to Edgar Preston Armstrong and Ruby Virginia Armstrong on October 6, 1930, in San Angelo, Texas. In 1947, she met Jimmy Gocher, her future husband. She and Jimmy were married June 14, 1950. They were married for 66 years before his passing in 2016. She is survived by her children and their spouses, Jay and Deborah Gocher, Mona and Demi Snelson, and daughter-in-law, Carla Gocher, plus grandchildren and their spouses and great-grandchildren. The family suggests any memorials be donated to Crisis Pregnancy Center or Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, December 2nd, 2022. All lit up. Starbright Village opens for holidays. It's a tradition that's been loved by Odessans for years, and on Thursday night it brought back more Christmas cheer. On Thursday, the biggest light show between El Paso and Dallas was lit up for the holiday season. Odessa's popular Starbright Village Christmas light show opened to the public at McKinney Park. at 625 North Poole Road with its opening ceremony and Christmas tree lighting. Quote, "I'm really excited," end quote, City of Odessa Parks and Rec Executive Director Steve Patton said. Quote, "I'm excited every year because it's a wonderful, neat event for Odessa and everyone in the surrounding communities and the official lighting of the Christmas tree," end quote. Thursday's ceremony included performances from choirs from different schools in Odessa, as well as cheer and dance team performances, as well as an appearance by Santa Claus. Thursday before the ceremony was filled with numerous last-second tasks for the crew members. Quote, "I had crews running all over this park, testing light bulbs and getting electricity distributed out appropriately," end quote, Patton said. Quote, "We had a computer glitch for the animation that we're troubleshooting, but everything else was good to go," end quote. The event not only included the opening of Starbright Village, but also the lighting of the community Christmas tree. Starbright Village contains the largest display of lights in the Permian Basin with over 300,000 lights and holiday-themed displays that bring the Christmas season to life. It'll be open to the public from 6 to 11 p.m. every day until January 1st. For some people, it was their first time out at the opening ceremony for Starbright Village. Quote, "We just wanted to bring the kids out here to see the lights," end quote, said Christina Figuero, who was with her family, including her two children. Quote, "We're pretty excited," end quote. For others, it's an event they return to each year. That included Stephanie Martinez, who was out with her three children for the fourth consecutive. Quote, "It brings my kids so much joy each year," end quote, Martinez said. Quote, "They know every year that Christmas is around the corner when we come out here. They want to see the lights, and we always come. Even my family that comes from out of town comes here to see the lights. It's so much fun," end quote. Each year, a new addition is added to Starbright Village. Quote, "We love how they add new lights each year," end quote, Martina said. Quote, "It's not just the same. Each year is different," end quote. This year's new addition is a horse with a cowboy who swings a lasso that spells out Happy Holiday that unfortunately had technical difficulties on Thursday. Quote, "It's a great, great new display," end quote, Patton said. Quote, "We are missing a piece of the computer, so all the animation on that one won't work until Sunday. It's just now coming in. We'll have that glitch taken care on Sunday. I'm excited to see it in full working order," end quote. Patton said that all the other lights on Thursday were working according to plan. Starbright Village is put on by the Odessa Parks and Recreation Department. With over 300,000 lights, the holiday-themed displays bring the season to life. Only the walking trail was open Thursday night. The drive-through viewing begins today. Starbright Village was started back in 1999 when the community Christmas tree was moved from City Hall due to space issues. The tree lighting originally took place on the south side of City Hall before its relocation. The tree was lit officially by Odessa Mayor Javier Jovan. For more information about Starbright Village, go to tinyurl.com/2P9Y627F. Galiban moves to stop disposal of remains. Mother, stepfather stand accused of 8-year-old's death. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Galiban has taken steps to prevent the mother of a murdered boy from burying or cremating him. According to court documents filed in Ector County District Court, an autopsy revealed a neglected and malnourished Arturo Coca, 8, died November 5th after being strangled to death. The boy's mother, Megan Lang, and his stepfather were arrested on suspicion of capital murder November 17th, but have not yet been indicted. Galiban has asked Judge Justin Lowe of the 161st Ector County District Court to prevent Lang from disposing of the boy's remains. A hearing has been scheduled for December 7th. According to his motion, the Texas legislature enacted a law that states a decedent's surviving parents and adult siblings, quote, may not control the disposition of the decedent's remains if, in connection with the decedent's death, an indictment has been filed charging the person with a crime, end quote, that involves family violence against the decedent. Galiban argues postponing the boy's burial or cremation until the grand jury is acted won't cause an, quote, undue hardship, unquote, on Acres West Funeral Chapel and Crematory, but the disposing of his remains would, quote, unduly interfere, end quote, with his statutorily mandated duties. Quote, the state believes that the foregoing evidence will be destroyed unless this court enters an order that the evidence be preserved for use in the trial of this case, end quote, Gallivan wrote. According to Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, Arturo was 35 pounds when his mother called 911 to report he was unresponsive. She also told deputies she thought his death was the result of diabetes. Both Lang, 29, and her husband, Rodolfo Reyes, 33, were arrested on suspicion of capital murder and injury to a child. They remain in the Ector County Jail on surety bonds totaling $3 million each. Arturo's obituary said he was a third grader at Burnett Elementary. However, Ector County Independent School District spokesman Mike Atkins said the boy hadn't attended an ECISD school since the 2020-2021 school year. The obit also said a funeral for the boy was held November 15th. Student experiments patches sent to space. In partnership with NASA and SpaceX, three Ector County ISD students had patches and experiments launched into space. Those items are now floating high above the Earth in the International Space Station, Superintendent Scott Murray said during his media call Wednesday. Swetha Kesavan, a 2022 Permian High School graduate, last year designed a science experiment to test the growth of a bacteria in microgravity, and that experiment will be conducted by astronauts on the International Space Station, ISS. The experiment was selected as the winner from ECISD by a national panel of researchers, scientists, and educators. Accompanying Kesavan's experiment will be two mission patches that were designed by ECISD students. With one elementary and one secondary winner being selected by ECISD staff members. The elementary winner is Celeste Ortega from E.K. Downing Elementary, and the secondary winner is Vivian Hernandez from Crockett Middle School. Murray said the SpaceX rocket took off November 26th. Quote, we're really proud of those three students and their accomplishments, and once again, ECISD is certainly making space a reality for many of our students, end quote, he added. The Odessa Pathway to Teaching program is now accepting applications for people in the community interested in becoming teachers. The deadline is February 13th. Quote, the Odessa Pathway to Teaching is one of three educator preparation programs in the state of Texas that is located within a school district, end quote, Murray said. The others are Houston and Dallas ISD. Quote, we have the ability to certify teachers in the state of Texas. You must currently possess a bachelor's degree. Our program helps you take multiple courses. You will learn about the art of teaching through that coursework, and then you'll have an opportunity to engage in an internship and student teaching experiences located in Ector County ISD. At the end of the program, upon successful completion, you'll be awarded your certification and a license to teach in the state of Texas and hopefully in Ector County Independent School District, end quote, Murray said. He added that you can check the ECISD website for information. The district also was featured in two national publications recently. Its mention was based on the work they are doing to extend the amount of learning time that students have access to in ECISD. Quote, we've extended the school year. We've extended it from 169 days to 180 days. In many of our schools, we've also extended the length of the day, so students have more access to their teachers, more time with their effective teachers, and additionally, we are part of the additional school day program, end quote, Murray said. The opportunity for additional days, along with, quote, access to great teachers, end quote, gives students a chance to recover from learning loss resulting from the pandemic and accelerate it to move ahead of their peers, he added. They have seen that the extended learning period is paying dividends for ECISD students. Quote, we were proud to be honored in a national publication, proud of the work we are doing to extend those opportunities for students, and excited to continue that work to see continued growth and development of students in ECISD, end quote, Murray said. Asked about burnout for students because of the added days, Murray said there is a balance, but it has to do with the type of activities going on. Quote, we don't want learning experiences with kids sitting in desks staring at a wall or staring at a teacher all day long. Kids should be actively engaged in the learning process, end quote, Murray said. Quote, what we're trying to combat is what typically happens in the summer months, and that is learning loss because many students are not actively engaged in learning during the summer, potentially. They sit and watch television. They sit and play a video game. Their brains are not working. They're not stimulated. They lose a lot of the learning that happens, and we call that the summer slide, end quote, he added. With the summer learning experience, students are less likely to lose what they've learned during the school year. Quote, so that investment of time has been a benefit to us. We've already seen the early results showing students that attended summer learning are outperforming their peers. End quote, he added. Quote, our assessments indicate that, end quote, Murray said. The teachers get paid over and above their contracts for working during summer learning. Murray said the teacher said they would love to teach summer school, but wanted to be able to take part of the summer off. Quote, so we introduced the job sharing opportunity. We have teachers that teach for the first half of the summer and not the second half. That idea was generated by our teachers so they have an option to work one half, the other half, or they can work the whole summer, end quote, Murray said. But it's not something they have considered for the regular school year. Asked about closing campuses in the wake of a stabbing at Subway near Permian High School, Murray said they are not considering that. Murray said the cafeterias at PHS and Odessa High School were not designed to feed the number of students at those campuses. Quote, we have 4,000 kids on each of those campuses. We rely on kids leaving campus for lunch. That's the only way we can feed those students is if they leave campus. This further accentuates the need for another high school in our system. We are not in any way considering closing campuses for lunch, end quote, Murray said. Odessa Collegiate Academy and OC Tech's juniors and seniors can also leave for lunch. On the topic of attendance, Murray said they are seeing it beginning to increase. The first 6 weeks, they were at 91.2%, and as of November 3rd, from the beginning of the year, they are now at 92.7%. Quote, parents are beginning to ensure that their kids are at school every day. Our attendance clerks and administrators on the campus level are reaching out to our families. When a child is absent, we're making sure that the parents are aware so they can bring their children to school. We hired some additional social workers that are working with families that struggle to get their kids to school. For whatever reason, that may be able to provide the supports that those families need to ensure that their kids are in school, end quote, Murray said. He added that they have hired 13 additional attendance clerks for the middle and high schools. Quote, the job of the attendance clerk is to work directly with families whose kids are not attending school. Those attendance clerks communicate directly with mom and dad to let them know that their children are not in school and work with them on a solution, end quote, to find out why and what they need to put in place to make sure their child is in attendance. Quote, at the end of the day, when a child is not in school, the child is not learning. Our kids have to be in school in order to continue the learning process, so we're very thankful that parents are realizing that and our attendance rates are increasing in ECISD, end quote, Murray said. Midland College Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society donates to Crisis Center of West Texas. Service project resulted in donation of $767 and 30 bags of personal care items. Each year, the Midland College Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society selects a service project that will benefit a group in Midland. This year, the students decided to assist domestic violence victims who are currently seeking assistance from the Crisis Center of West Texas. On Friday, November 18th, Midland College student and PTK Vice President Maria Gonzalez and Midland College Government Professor and Honors Program Director Dr. Terry Gilmore delivered 30 bags of personal care items and $767 to the center. The project began on October 26th when PTK members solicited assistance from Midland College employees and students. Quote, when we asked our fellow students and Midland College employees for donations, the response was overwhelming, end quote, Gonzalez said. Quote, individuals, both students and employees, contributed. A dual-credit English class taught by Felicia Stovall joined us by making this their class project, and the Student Nurses Association contributed with many items as well. People dropped off the items in Dr. Gilmore's office and or donated money. In addition to the 30 bags of items, we also donated $767 for the Crisis Center clients, end quote. Gonzalez stated that during PTK's service project research, members discovered that the Crisis Center of West Texas currently houses 47 survivors of domestic violence and sexual abuse, 19 adults and 28 children. They also maintain a 24-hour hotline, free counseling, case management, and legal advocacy. Quote, in 2021, There were 204 Texans killed by their intimate partners, and five of those were in the Permian Basin, end quote, Gonzalez explained. Quote, people our age, 14 to 25, are at the highest risk for interpersonal violence, end quote. Local news roundup. Man sentenced for indecent exposure. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan announced via a press release on Thursday the sentence for 55-year-old Russell J. Wilkes for indecent exposure. The press release detailed Wilkes was found guilty by a jury on November 30th and sentenced to 90 days in the Ector County Jail and a $1,000 fine. The punishment for a Class B misdemeanor is up to 180 days in jail and a fine not to exceed $2,000, and if applicable, the sentence could be probated. Wilkes was charged with exposing himself to an employee in a restaurant drive-through line. The judge ordered that Wilkes' jail sentence begin on January 2, 2023. The prosecution team was led by Assistant District Attorneys Ricky Ernest and Stephen Lively. OFR extinguishes house fire. The residents of a home in the 1600 block of West 10th Street came home Wednesday night to find out their home had caught on fire. Odessa Fire Rescue Captain Terry Brumbelow said dispatchers received a 911 call about a house fire shortly before 9 p.m., and it took roughly 20 firefighters 15 minutes to control the blaze, which began inside a room in the back of the house. No one was home at the time of the fire, which caused mostly smoke damage, he said. The cause of the fire remains under investigation, Brumbelow said. The American Red Cross did not have to be called, as the residents had other places to stay, he said. Man arrested on drug charges. Driving with his high beams on landed on an El Paso man in the Ector County Jail Tuesday night on felony drug charges. According to an Odessa Police Department report, two Odessa officers pulled over a Cadillac in the 1000 block of West County Road around 9 p.m. Tuesday because its driver failed to dim its high beams as it was approaching their patrol car from the opposite direction. The driver of the Cadillac, Jason Carbajal, and his passenger, Odessa resident John Marquez, 30, appeared to be extremely nervous, but Carbajal said the officer gave the officers permission to search the car, the report stated. One of the officers found a baggie filled with M30 pills, which are often fentanyl-laced oxycodone, and while he was handcuffing Carbajal, Marquez took off running, the report stated. The second officer caught Marquez a few blocks away and arrested him on suspicion of evading detention, a misdemeanor, the report stated. He was also arrested on suspicion of resisting arrest and assaulting a public servant. During the continued search of the Cadillac, the officers found more M30 pills, bringing the total weight found to 18.5 grams, according to the report. They also found methamphetamine and a meth pipe. Carbajal, 31, admitted all of the drugs were his, according to the report. Carbajal was arrested on suspicion of manufacture and delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony, and possession of a controlled substance, a third-degree felony. First-degree felonies are punishable by 5 years to life in prison. He was also arrested on the state jail felony of criminal mischief for causing more than $2,500 damage to one of the patrol unit's doors by kicking it, the report stated. Carbajal remained in the Ector County Jail Thursday on surety bonds totaling $108,000. Marquez remained in the Ector County Jail Thursday on bonds totaling $16,000. Man accused of stalking former wife. A 60-year-old man was arrested Wednesday after his former wife told Odessa police officers he came all the way from Florida to stalk her. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 38-year-old woman separated from her husband, Roberto Batista Martinez, and moved from Miami, Florida to Odessa a year ago. In September, the woman filed a police report alleging Martinez was threatening her through a third party, and she gave officers a Florida case number about an incident where he showed up unexpectedly at her work. On Wednesday, the woman called 911 to report Martinez was following her. She said he began following her after she left work on John Ben Shepherd and continued to follow her, although she was taking various turns to make sure it was truly him following her, the report stated. Since she didn't want him to know where she lives, she drove to the police station, the report stated. After speaking with her at the station, officers found Martinez nearby and conducted a traffic stop on him, the report stated. Martinez told them it was a coincidence he was driving on the same streets as his former wife. Martinez told officers he'd just gotten done taking a drug test for a drug for a truck company in Midland and was on his way to his Odessa home when he changed his mind and decided to head back to the truck company, the report stated. Martinez was arrested on suspicion of stalking, a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. No bail had been set as of Thursday morning. MPD investigating homicide. On November 30th, at approximately 5 p.m., the Midland Police Department and Midland Fire Department, EMS, responded to the 1900 block of North Midland Drive in reference to a gunshot victim. The Crimes Against Persons Unit and MPD Crime Scene Unit were notified and responded to the scene. A 17-year-old male sustained multiple gunshot wounds. He was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was later pronounced deceased, a news release said. The next of kin was notified, and no arrests have been made. The investigation is ongoing, the release said. The Magic Returns. Midland Festival Ballet's production of The Nutcracker is back. Midland. Each year, the Midland Festival Ballet puts on its performance of The Nutcracker, and this year, it returns with slightly more performers. After having to cancel its live performance in 2020 due to COVID restrictions, the famous Russian ballet by composer Pyotr Tchaikovsky was back on the stage at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center with an in-person performance. This year, Midland Festival Ballet's Director of Communications, Pearl Walmsley, says they will be able to have more dancers involved with the performance. The live performance will take place at 7:30 p.m. December 10th and 2:30 p.m. December 11th at the WNPAC. Quote, "It just feels like a larger cast this year," end quote, Walmsley said. Quote, "There are a lot of new kids and new faces. We're bringing back some old faces that we've missed working with, and we're happy to have them back. It's always great to have the West Texas Symphony accompany us as well. That's great. It feels like it's going to be a very exciting performance. We do it every year, and some years feel a little more special than others, and this one feels like it's going to be very special," end quote. About 90 local dancers will take part in this year's production of The Nutcracker, with 5 guest artists. Midland Festival Ballet has put on their performance for about 29 years now, which has been a culmination of the community's effort and talent. Midland Festival Ballet facilitates and coordinates the production. The cast is comprised of students from dance studios all over West Texas. Some of the principal roles are filled by guest artists from premier professional ballet companies across the country. Their presence provides professional exposure and mentorship to the students. One of the guest artists this year will be Yuriko Kajiya, playing the Sugar Plum Fairy from Houston Ballet. Kajiya joined Houston Ballet in 2014 as a first soloist before being promoted to the rank of principal dancer later that year. She has performed all over the world throughout her career. Playing the role of the Cavalier is Chun Wei Chan from the New York City Ballet, who has also worked with the Houston Ballet in the past. Both dancers are not new to the Midland Festival Ballet, as they performed in the Permian Basin 3 years ago. Quote, "Kajaya is an amazing dancer," end quote, Walmsley said. Quote, "She's going to be the Sugar Plum, and her cavalier is going to be Chun Wei Chan from the New York City Ballet. He's also amazing. We're very excited to have them back. We had them in 2019 to do our spring ballet called Giselle. We love them, but of course they are very busy and sought after guest artists. It's taken them a while to come back, but it's been exciting that it works out this year," end quote. With this year's production coming together, Walmsley says the energy has been created amongst the dancers. Quote, "The more people that you have involved, the more that the teachers buy in," end quote, Walmsley said. Quote, "Everyone feeds off each other's energy. When one person gets excited, it gets bigger. I think that is a large contributing factor. You have a lot of people coming together to accomplish one thing. Having a large cast is fun, but being able to perform in front of a live audience with live music that makes more people contributing to the buzz of the performance. It feels that much more magical. You also have people's live reactions. That's the cherry on top. It's special. Once that moment in time is done, it doesn't happen the same way again. It's never exactly the same twice. That makes it much more special," end quote. The Nutcracker is the first live production that Midland Festival Ballet is doing for its 2022-23 season. The Midland Festival Ballet will also be hosting the Regional Dance America 2023 Southwest Festival in March. For tickets to The Nutcracker and more information about Midland Festival Ballet, go to tinyurl.com/5n78k3b9. Community Christmas tree lighting to take place at Optimus Park next week. Each year, the Pilot Club of Odessa and the Permian Basin Rehab Center team up to host the annual Christmas tree lighting at Optimus Park, and this year will be no different. This year's lighting is scheduled for 6 p.m. December 5th at Optimus Park. Each year, a patient from the Permian Basin Rehab Center is given the honor of lighting the community Christmas tree. This year's patient representative from Permian Basin Rehab Center is Jace Rodriguez. Quote, "What it means for us is that we're trying to create a healthy community with the services that the rehab center offers," end quote. Chairwoman of the Christmas tree lighting, Mary Blaine, said. Quote, "We know that there is a lot of need in the community. With the Pilot Club, we're trying to help out as much as we can," end quote. With a $10 donation, people can let a light shine on the tree in honor or in memory of someone. Blaine talked more about the partnership with the Pilot Club and the Permian Basin Rehab Center. Quote, "With the community Christmas tree, that has been a good partnership with the rehab center," end quote, Blaine said. Quote, "Every time the rehab center sees a patient, there's always a loss. We don't make any money on that. We're not here to make money. We're here to serve the patient. We have a lot of patients that can't even pay, and even if they can, they're going through financial issues. We offer all kinds of help. The community Christmas tree generally helps. We usually raise about $25,000 that we gather in a year to help with the services with the community," end quote. Donations can be made at the Permian Basin Rehab Center's website at www.pbrehab.com or by calling 432-332-8244. The event will also include the Nimitz Junior High School Choir performing. Guests can also enjoy hot chocolate and cookies, and Santa and Mrs. Claus will also be on deck. Quote, "We're going to have cookies and cocoa for everybody attending," end quote, Blaine said. Quote, "We're going to have the choir with the music as well. At the end of the evening, when this is over, we're going to have Jace have a wand and point at the tree and light the tree. It's so beautiful. It's fast. We hope everyone comes out. It's very nice," end quote. For more information, go to tinyurl.com/BDFW52WS. JLO hosting Christmas carriage rides. The Junior League of Odessa will be hosting its fifth annual Christmas carriage rides beginning December 7th. The Christmas carriage rides will take place December 7th to December 10th and December 12th to December 14th. Rides will start every 20 minutes from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. and will run through the Emerald Forest subdivision. There will be parking available in the alleyway southwest of Shiloh Road and Stony Ridge Road. The fifth annual carriage rides is a fundraiser for the Junior League of Odessa to support the mission of raising funds and providing volunteers for the West Texas community, as well as providing leadership development opportunities for JLO members. The event consists of a horse-drawn carriage ride through the beautifully decorated and brightly lit Emerald Forest subdivision. Carriages are available in three sizes: 4-person, 6-person, and 12-person. Children 3 years and younger are free but must remain seated on an adult's lap throughout the ride. Sweet Traveler Patisserie will be on-site selling hot chocolate and other confections for ride-goers. Reservations for carriage rides are available at tinyurl.com/5n6u3kv3. The cost for a 4-person carriage ride is $150, while a 6-person carriage ride is $200, and a 12-person carriage ride is $375. Christmas carriage rides sponsors include Odessa Marriott, Basin Orthopedic Surgical Specialists, First Physicians, Jason Yelly State Farm Insurance, Medical Center Health System, the Michael Ashton Family, Bulldog Safety Anchors, Elite Supply Partners, Southwest Heritage Credit Union, Hawkins Construction, and Warren Catt.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.